The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now is Elaine Parker, and she is the Chief Communications Officer for Job Creators Network, along with Scott Rasmussen, one of the greatest pollers of all time in the history of polling. And they're going to be breaking things down for us. Scott and Elaine, great to have you with us 8 days out.
Great to be with you, John.
Okay, Scott, let's start with Scott Rasmussen. By the way, if you don't know Scott Rasmussen, this is one of the most accurate pollers in the history of polling. He gets everything right. When he started this thing, you get all these polls. This was way before social media and stuff. That was the only poll I ever trusted was his. Now, Scott, tell me the violence we've had in the past 3 days, as horrific as it is. Will this have an impact on turnout? Will it have an impact either way?
It's hard to say right now. In our daily tracking poll at ScottRasmussen.com, we noticed that through all of last week, the generic congressional ballot was getting a little tighter. Republicans were gaining ground. On our last day of polling before the weekend and after those horrible events, we did note a bounce for the Democrats. But you know, with 1 day of polling, you don't know if that's the beginning of a trend, if it's a fluke, or if it's just some noise in the data. So we're going to be watching very closely in the coming days. Right now, though, you said it a moment ago, it's all about turnout. We look at a couple of different turnout models. In one of them, which is the most the lightest turnout model, the Democrats are up on the generic ballot by 7 points. That would be enough to give them control of the House. The other model, which includes people who say they're likely to vote but not sure, that model shows the Republicans doing better and probably well enough to hang on to control. So it is all about turnout in these final 8 days.
Okay, so if I could just summarize this, what you've said is you don't know what impact the violence is going to have. And in one-day polling, bounce for the Dems, I think that's what everybody would expect to have happen because the Dems are all over TV now blaming Trump for anything that happens. It doesn't matter. They blamed him for the Dodgers loss in L.A. It really doesn't matter. So we get that, but you don't know where it's going. But it seems like turnout is everything now because the Democrats are getting their people out, right, Scott?
That's right. Look, Democrats, and this is typical for a party out of power, Democrats are fired up to vote in this election. They right now, if we look at a race-by-race projection, there's already about 12 seats that are held by Republicans that are going likely to flip to the Democrats in the House, and that's 12 of the 23 that they need to win control. And there's another 31 races that are just too close to call right now. Democrats need to win about a third of those to take over the House. And the difference is all turnout. If these races are close, a shift of 1 or 2 points can make all the difference.
Right, so that's basically it. The Democrats need 23. 12 are gone, so they actually need half that. They need 12, and 33 are tied, so if they get 12 out of the 33, which is just over one-third, they win. I mean, simple math. So it favors them, unlike the Senate, which is the exact opposite. All right, let me get to Elaine Parker, Elaine, the communications chief for Job Creators Network. Elaine, let me ask you about this. I know you've been spending a lot of time on the road, talking to a lot of small business owners, typically they don't get that enthusiastic about a midterm. They just don't get out. How do you get small business owners, their employees, and everybody else that have benefited from the Trump economy, how do you get them off their duff and get involved in the next 8 days?
John, we have just, Job Creators Network has just finished a 48-stop national bus tour, a meeting with hundreds of small business owners around the country. And the enthusiasm amongst small business owners and even their employees that attended the events was quite high. And the reason behind that is because of the economy and the way they're feeling about the economy. Their optimism is sky high, and they're investing in their businesses, which means they're investing in their employees and their communities. And everyone is reaping the benefits of that. So I'm optimistic. I'm realistic, but I'm optimistic. And I think that we will see a higher turnout on both sides, of course. But I think small business is doing very well, and I think they want to keep the tax cuts in place. I think they want to see further deregulation and the things that have helped them really expand and grow their businesses.
Well, I think the key is people can get complacent and take things for granted. So you look at it's amazing. My wife and I were just talking last evening about how to prepare for the 2019 tax season, and she was telling me of all the benefits that we got, and I said at the end of it, I'm like, these could all go away if the Democrats take control of the House. The first thing they're going to do is try to repeal the tax cut. They'll have enough Democratic senators to go with them. I mean, they're going to gum the whole thing up, and we're going to end up paying more money. And so, maybe we ought to not make a hire until we find out what happens. I mean, that's the reality, Elaine, that a lot of people deal with. If the Democrats win, I'm not going to hire anybody because I don't know what's going to happen. Doesn't that affect the economy overall?
Well, that's true. There's 30 million small businesses out there, and they are depending on, policies like lower taxes and less regulations to help them continue growing their businesses. And if there's a feeling out there that those policies are going to be reversed or pulled back, which the congressional Democrats have absolutely vowed to pull back these tax cuts, then they will start retreating and stop investing. These are important things that have led to such a hot economy, and we can't let that happen. We cannot let that happen. We've got a website called taxcutswork.com. You can go there, and you can find out a lot more information about the tax cuts and what we're doing on our national bus tour that we've just completed, and meeting with small business owners, meeting with community leaders, and they are fired up. It's important that people get out there and have their voices heard, and it's important that they get out there and vote.
Well, that's the thing. You simply have to get out and vote. And if you want more information also, you can go to ScottRasmussen.com. That's ScottRasmussen.com and his polling numbers. Scott, let's get to you. I want to get to New Jersey. Cook Political Report just changed that from likely Dem with Menendez to toss-up. I almost fell off my chair. Now, I've had people telling me for months that Bob Hougan was going to make this a race. I'm from New Jersey, so I don't believe any of it's all lies, as far as I'm concerned. But now you got this thing, as the Cook Report saying, it's a toss-up. Is this real?
Well, I think what the Cook Report is doing is they have a very broad definition of toss-up. They also consider the Ted Cruz-Beto O'Rourke race a toss-up.
Oh, forget that.
And clearly, Ted Cruz is heavily favored to win that. I live in New York City.
Right.
Every time, the only thing we watch on local TV is the local news, and every single commercial break has at least one campaign commercial on that Senate race. The Democrats have just poured $6 million more into the race in the last couple of weeks. They are concerned. Menendez has terrible favorability ratings. But look, it's still New Jersey. I think it would be maybe not a completely shocking outcome, but it would certainly be a very big surprise if Menendez loses that race.
I don't think he's going to lose. I think that those of us from the New Jersey, New York area. Like, come on, forget it. That's the, it's like the people.
And look, I mean, I think that's part of the reality of this. It is, if this was a strong Republican year, something might be different. And I suspect the race will be closer than most other contests in New Jersey. But at the end of the day, I think Menendez goes back.
Okay, so you mentioned something interesting, Scott. You said that in your most recent polling that the generic ballot difference between Republicans and Democrats had narrowed to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And you said 7 is enough to give, in this environment, the Democrats control the House. Obviously, the math is easy. If it goes higher than 7, they have a better chance. What is the I mean, I could do some math. What is the number where you would say, wow, I think Republicans can actually hang on by 1 or 2 or maybe 3? Is that 5? Is that 4? What is it?
It's 4 or 5 to be comfortable that the Republicans could, you know, and again, this is when you talk about a national poll, it doesn't translate directly race to race. But I think most people, and I certainly would say if the Republicans hold it to 4 points, they're favored to take the House. If it's 5 points or 6 points, then you're kind of in toss-up territory. And then as you move up to 7 points and higher, the Democrats are clearly favored. And look, I should point out, you know, we're talking about it being close right now with all of these races. If the Republican turnout is a bit higher, they have a chance to hang on to the House. But the other side of it is if the Democratic turnout is higher than projected and if the Republicans stay home, the Democrats forget 23 seats. They have a chance to get something like 40 seats or 45 seats on a very good turnout night. So this turnout and this idea of how close these races are is something very important to this outcome.
Right, because when you said what I'm going to hang my hat on here is 12 are gone, right? We all know that.
Yep.
So let's just do the math. 12 are gone. So that leaves 11 seats the Democrats
need. They need 11 more to win control.
Right.
And there are just over 30 races that are too close to call right now, but they're highly competitive. And if the Democrats win 11 of those 31, they take control. So clearly they have the edge. And I should also point out that if the Democrats don't win control, they'll still pick up significant gains. Of these 31 competitive races, 29 of them are held by Republicans.
Right. And if they run the table, right, then that's where they get the 40, 45 seat blue wave pickup.
Right.
So if you do the math for those listening to us right now, how tough it is for Republicans to hold the House is they can only lose 11 of the 30 seats that are right, that are tied right now. Actually, 10. They can only lose 10 of the 30. They have to win 20 right. of the 30. And three of them right here in Virginia. One is tied. One, the Republican, is slightly ahead in the second district, Scott Taylor. Dave Brat, Abigail Spanberger tied. And then Wexton ahead of Comstock in Northern Virginia. So on a blue wave day, the Dems pick up all those. If the Republicans have a good evening, they can win 2 of the 3 or all 3. Let's get the final word in from Elaine. Elaine, according to Scott, it's all about Republicans turning out, right? That's it.
Absolutely.
Now, 8 days. It's all about them turning out. And what's your message? We have a couple races in Virginia specifically where the Libertarian is taking votes away from the Republican that could swing it. What would be your message to those voters, Elaine?
My message to voters, small business owners, and their employees is that the economy that we're feeling is a result of the tax cuts and also a result of the deregulation and the efforts that the administration has made to make affordable health care affordable for small business and put them on a level playing ground with corporations and be able to spread the risk amongst the 30 million small business owners out there. And if the Democrats do flip the Congress, those are things that they are absolutely and have vowed to repeal and take back, and we will see a reversal of everything that we have been feeling for the last 2 years.
All right, I'm out of time. I want to thank Elaine Parker for being with us, Chief Communications Officer, Job Creators Network. Go to bigchoiceelection.com. Get involved. Scott Rasmussen, always great to have such great insight. Go to scottrasmussen.com. 7 days remaining. the Republicans looking very good in the U.S. Senate. I'm still predicting they pick up 5 seats. I know that's a very bold prediction. In the House, however, another story. Math, history, trends, and everything else not going the Republicans' way. It's a long road. They got to thread the needle to hang on. Don't know if it's going to happen, but we're following it very, very closely. There's 3 races in Virginia that are up for grabs. Well, they say they're up for grabs. There's really one of them that's close, and that is the 7th District. That's a toss-up. Everybody's got a tide. Taylor's going to win the 2nd. Denver's going to win the 5th. And I'm predicting Barbara Comstock against all odds. The 7-1 underdog holds on to her seat in Northern Virginia. But that's just me. Hey, this segment brought to you by your good friends at Job Creators Network. I love Job Creators Network because, like, they're for creating jobs, like for small business people like me. And, you know, folks, here's the deal. Off-year elections are about one thing, turnout. The other side, they're getting them all. If they can find a Democratic voter, they're dragging them to the polls. They're working their tails off, and they're very motivated. They're showing up. This upcoming midterm election is going to be the most important in history. It is a referendum on Trumponomics, our economy, and President Trump's America First economic agenda. There's a lot of things on the ballot besides a Republican candidate. A lot of things, like, let's see, the tax savings you got, that's on the ballot. The American economy, the growth we're getting, the jobs we're getting, that's on the ballot. America's great economic comeback, that's on the ballot too. Your jobs and your kids' jobs, guess what else? That's on the ballot. And your basement. Remember, your kids lived in the basement because they couldn't get a job. Then they moved out. They got a job. Now you got your basement back. Nope, that's going. That's on the ballot too. Your promotion, your raises, your wages, your earnings, your investments, your retirement, all on the ballot. And if you're a small business owner like me, these tax cuts, which are huge, which has helped us expand, buy a new radio station, buy new equipment, hire people, that's all on the ballot too. Because if the other side gets in, it's all going away. And here's the biggest issue on the ballot. Who's in charge of your future? Politicians and corruptocrats in the swamp where I am, or you? If you want to preserve the victories of the past 2 years, I'm urging you, get involved this November. Go to bigchoiceelection.com. That's all you have to do. I don't really know what to do. bigchoiceelection.com. I'm kind of shy. I don't like to make phone calls. You don't have to make phone calls. If you want to make calls, that's great. You can send emails, text. You can knock on doors. You can do a literature drop. You can take a neighbor to the polls. Oh, I don't have a car. It doesn't matter. You can, if you have a computer, you can work right from home, or you can bring the coffee and donuts. You can do whatever you want, but you got to get involved. I don't want to join the Republican Party and go to meetings. Look, nobody gets that more than me. I get that one. BigChoiceElection.com. What's the URL? BigChoiceElection.com. That's all you have to do. Key it in, hit the button, and get involved. BigChoiceElection.com. Because the only way you lose in 2018 is if you don't do anything, if you don't show up, if you don't work, if you don't turn out. BigChoiceElection.com. Do your part. Don't get outworked in November and then lament when Pelosi takes over by 3 votes, right? Do what you got to do. Go to bigchoiceelection.com. This message paid for and authorized by the Job Creators Network. Speaking of the Job Creators Network, joining us now, Alfredo Ortiz. He is the president and CEO of the Job Creators Network. Alfredo, how goes it?
John, everything is going great. We are busy out there trying to do the last push. And I have to tell you what you said right at the end, we couldn't agree more. Everyone can do some can do more, and a few can do much. And we're just asking everybody to do something, because I think this is going to be a really, really close election. I actually am still making my bold prediction that the Republicans are going to hold the House, but maybe by 2 or 3 seats. So, and I think it's going to come down to, in some cases, hundreds of votes.
Hundreds of votes. I agree with you 100%. This election is so close. I was saying earlier, Alfredo Ortiz, that small business owners have got to get out there. If you own a small business, or you have a family member that owns a small business, I mean, you're nuts if you don't work and get out there and vote, because that big tax cut you got, that opportunity to grow your company and do better for your family, that's all going away. Once Pelosi takes the gavel, she's cutting it all back. It's all going away. And here's the deal. The Abigail Spanbergers of the world and all these people can get up on my radio show and say, oh, I'm not going to vote for Pelosi. That's a ruse. Who are they going to vote for? Nancy Pelosi has said, if we are in control by one vote, I'm speaker. I have the votes in the caucus. Say what you want in the campaign trail. That's the bottom line, but you have to get involved because, my goodness, there's so much at stake. And right now, 30 seats are tied, and Republicans have to win 19 of those. They have to win 19 of the 30 toss-ups. Alfredo, can they do it?
I think they can. I mean, I think it's, like I said, in the House, my bold prediction, again, is two or three seats. Republicans hold the majority, and I think they'll pick up two or three seats in the Senate. So, but it's going to be that close. And but you're right, in terms of what's on the ballot, right? We know what's on the ballot. All the great economic news that we have now seen, the prosperity we have seen in the past 2 years, John, is all at stake. 7.2 million unfilled jobs right now, and only 6.1 million folks, basically, or 6.2 million folks to fill it. I mean, we have about a million extra jobs than people are there, you know, hardworking Americans to fill them. I mean, this is great. The economic, you know, growth, it was 4.2% last quarter, 3.5% GDP growth, you know, economic growth this quarter. And frankly, I think that's going to be upgraded probably to about 3.7 is my guess. You know, the strength is there. The economy's red hot. But when you see what they have promised, I mean, they've promised higher taxes, frankly, a weaker economy because they're going to bring back red tape and regulations. The Democrats seem to love that. And the worst of all is Bernie care, or maybe in the spirit of Halloween right now, Bernie scare is probably the best way to say that. Because what it plans to do, this Medicare for all, is really Medicare for none. And it's going to hurt seniors the most.
Well, there's a lot at stake here, Alfredo, and there's a lot of close races. And I think you're right. I mean, I'm planning to be up till 5 or 6 a.m. and then go right on the air, kind of the way I did in 2016, because we're going to be counting. There's so many races. And I don't even think it's going to be decided on election night. You know, there's a chance that there are 5 or 6 races that are going to determine the outcome that are hanging in the balance, that are going to recounts, right, or they're tied, or the votes are still coming in, or absentee ballots. This is going to be razor thin. But if you're a small business owner, I mean, I got to tell you, I urge you, if you own a business, it doesn't matter how big it could be, putting labels on T-shirts, doesn't matter. If you own a business, this is the most critical election you're going to have because, Alfredo, we've seen it in our own business. I mean, I have a very small company, but this tax cut has allowed us to hire people, buy another radio station, invest in equipment. I mean, under Obama, I couldn't do that. I just couldn't. We were stuck in the mud.
And that's right, John. I mean, you know, we just wrapped up our tax cuts work for this year, 48 stops in about 29 states. We traveled almost 40,000 miles. And I'll have to tell you, you know, this is actually our third year of doing a bus tour. The first year was bring small businesses back. Last year was really pushing for the tax cuts for small businesses under our Tax Cuts Now campaign. And then this year, our tax cuts work. You know, when you combine all that, we've probably traveled almost 75, 80,000 miles across the country, talking to hundreds and thousands of small business owners about, you know, what was challenging them before under the Obama administration. And now under the Trump administration, all that was addressed, you know, the higher red tape, you know, the high tax environment, the unfriendly environment in terms of lending, all that was addressed under the Trump administration. And that's why I think we're seeing small business optimism at sky high levels. But, you know, we've got, you know, this challenge that they have point blank. The Democrats have point blank said they will repeal these tax cuts. They think that, you know, that it was too much to give to businesses. And I don't think, you know, I think they fail to understand that, you know, small business in this country truly is the backbone of this country. And we have to give our small business owners the breaks that we have. And frankly, I'm going to keep advocating for more because it is the backbone of our country. We have 60 million hardworking Americans by small businesses. That means that this is a community. Overall, when you take the employers, right, the small business owners, the entrepreneurs, and their employees, that's 90 million people, John, who are benefiting from the growth of the economy and, you know, from the growth and the optimism of small business and the reinvestment that they got right? The expert cash that they got, they're reinvesting it back in the business. Anybody, you're a small business owner, I was a small business owner. Anybody who owns a small business knows what do you do? You reinvest back in your business because you want it to grow.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Singer Lee Greenwood's hit God Bless the USA has been a standard at President Donald Trump's events ever since he announced his campaign for president. For Mr. Trump's rally Sunday night in Chattanooga, Tennessee, ahead of midterm elections, Lee Greenwood appeared on stage to deliver that song in person. The remains of Utah mayor, who was also a major in the Utah Army National Guard and killed in Afghanistan, are scheduled to arrive Monday evening at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. Authorities say funeral plans still pending for 39-year-old Brent Taylor. Officials say that he was training commandos in Afghanistan and died when a member of the Afghan security forces shot him on Saturday. Taylor leaves behind a wife and seven children. A Western Wisconsin school district making counselors available for students following the deaths of three Girl Scouts and a parent who were killed in a hit-and-run crash along a rural road. This is SRN News.
Transmission problems? Call Action Transmission Specialists on Merrill Road, where you get the work done right the first time by the experts. I'm Robin Sidbury, the owner. Our techs can service all makes and models, and we provide a nationwide warranty so you have the peace of mind knowing we solve your transmission troubles fairly and honestly and guaranteed nationwide. Call us at Action Transmission Specialist on Merrill Road, where quality counts. Get traction. Call Action at 744-0755.
The year was 1957, and Elvis Presley purchased a mansion in Memphis and named it Graceland. And in Liverpool, the Cavern Club opened and featured the Beatles, which is where the Fab Four got their start. 1957 was also the year that the Bogers family opened their shoe store in Park Street here in Jacksonville. Since then, Boger Shoes has been providing orthopedic and diabetic shoes for thousands of customers in Northeast Florida. Boger Shoes specializes in extra-wide width shoes, and they offer free evaluations and fittings by three board-certified podiatrists on staff. With your doctor's prescription, they can custom-make orthotics in their on-site lab. And for the month of November, the Birkenstock Boston is the shoe of the month, and you will receive a 10% discount off Dansko shoes. Some restrictions apply. Good old-fashioned customer service has been the key to Boger Shoes' success since 1957. Stop by 1014 Park Street in Five Points and experience the Boger Shoes difference. Boger Shoes, the answer for hurting feet.
Are you having issues with your roof? Hi, AJ Davis here. After a strong storm last summer, I noticed the shingles on my roof were no longer on the roof, so I contacted my friend John about SNC Square Contracting, asked him about his experience. He said, go for it. They put on a new roof, and after two hurricanes and several summer storms, all the shingles are where they should be, no leaks. So protect your home. Call SNC Square LLC, Roofing with Integrity, at 524-8621. That's 524-8621.
Obama said the word nationalist and explained it, they wouldn't have any problem with it. But it's Trump. Trump represents an existential threat to mushy-headed liberalism. They know it. They have to take away the rhetorical devices and weapons and issues that Trump has successfully used against the left to expose the left. They have to remove those topics from his discussion.
Laura Ingraham, 9 to 11 a.m. on AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Joining us now to talk about a lot of topics, we're going to start with the horrific anti-Semitic hate crime at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, just one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. I don't know what this country is coming to, but these crazy people just go into it. People are praying, and they just get massacred on a Saturday morning. Unbelievable. Joining us now for that and many other things, Liz Peek from New York. You can follow Liz at Liz Peek. She's also a contributor to The Hill. Liz, great to have you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Liz, 8 days to the midterms, a lot at stake here. All of us were just shocked and dismayed and saddened and sickened by another massacre in another place of worship. Liz, what is going on in the United States?
I don't know. I think that there really has been a hardening of attitudes. I think there's anger everywhere. And I think, you know, look, I don't think it's new with Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump was elected in part because of the anger that has boiled up against what people refer to as the ruling elites, or however you want to describe it. And I do think that's true to some degree. I think that there's a real feeling amongst a lot of people in this country that they have been ignored, brushed aside, as people who running big businesses and big institutions have benefited from globalization really not stop to think about what that meant for some other people in the country. But, you know, it is alarming because we are about, as you point out, to have another election. And I'm afraid that, you know, there's a good chance that the Democrats are going to retake the House of Representatives. And the progress that has been made under President Trump in righting some of the wrongs that have prevailed, you know, it's going to be rolled back. I mean, I really think this is an incredibly dangerous situation. And by the way, for anyone who thinks that the Democrats might be mollified by taking back the House, that the firestorm of political activism and hate speech and everything might calm down, forget it, because we're going to have Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, one of the most dishonest politicians out there and one of the most ruthless competitors. You know, we have people like Maxine Waters going to be taking over the House Financial Services Committee and Adam Schiff taking over the Intelligence Committee. I'm not making these things up. Those are the ranking members. And from all appearances, those are the people who are going to be running these committees. And what we're in for, John, is 2 years at least of endless investigations, subpoenas into every aspect of Donald Trump's life and finances and business organization. It's going to be an incredible mess. And I think, honestly, I think people are just going to get angrier and angrier as this goes on.
It's a sad situation.
It is.
Liz, what did you think of Adam Schiff and the Democrats on the heels of this horrific hate crime? I mean, I'm beside myself with what happened in Pittsburgh. I just can't believe we're still having this. But then they get out the next day and they go on TV and they blame the president for this. I mean, what is the matter with these people?
Well, I saw more blame throwing after all the bombs that were sent to Democrat favorites like Maxine Waters. I thought after this particular event there was less of that, really, because this guy was hated Trump as much as he hated Jews, apparently. You know, you and I have talked about this before. I think after the Parkland school shooting, we both agreed that having people like this fellow who's ranting and raving on social media have access to an AK-47, it's really unconscionable. And I don't know how to change that, but it does seem to me that it should be changed, because without that kind of weaponry, he could not inflict the damage that he did. But I do think this country has been trending more violent for 20 years. I think it starts in the entertainment industry, which has taken no responsibility whatsoever for the fact that they're constantly spinning out ever more hate-filled and violent movies, the video games. You know, John, there's just too much money on the table, because you can produce a new popular video game that is horrifying in detailed murder, rape, all kinds of scenes that, you know, really are not healthy. And they make $1 billion within a day. Literally, that's possible in some of these games that are coming out. There's no will to roll that back. And I do think, I mean, studies have shown that kids, particularly young men, are desensitized by all this material that they're exposed to and that they engage in. I mean, they sit behind a little computer and spend their days mowing down women, babies. I don't know if you've ever looked at any of this stuff. It is horrifying in terms of its graphic detail and the violence that it encourages. So I don't think it's all about Donald Trump. I do think the country needs to take stock. I would like to see, I actually would like to see the president and the leaders of both parties kind of come together and say, okay, we get it. This is not helping the country, all this blame game stuff and hurling epithets and insults at each other. Let us try to elevate our discourse. I don't know if it's possible because you have people like Michael Avenatti who has decided that his greatest shot at fame is being just as vulgar and aggressive and hate-filled as he can be. That's his mantra, and it's working. I mean, he went from being an absolute non-entity a year and a half ago to now having millions of followers in social media. That's really despicable, and he is despicable, but unfortunately it works for him.
Well, it works for him in the short term, yes. I guess. But even the short term, the guy is a completely loathsome character. Yes. But you got to blame CNN for giving this guy hours and hours and hours of primetime media coverage talking about the president's private parts and whatever it is that they talk about on CNN is so ridiculous. They've given him hours and hours of coverage as if he's legit. He's not. And if you study the guy, he's bankrupted every business he's ever had. He's got every partner he's ever had is suing him. I mean, the guy's an absolute ambulance chaser creep. And CNN put this guy on the national stage. I mean, it's unbelievable what is going on. But I agree with you with these video games. I mean, we try to monitor. I've got one child left at home, a 14-year-old. The others are gone. We try to monitor that. And we're very fortunate, Liz, in this day and time because our youngest son's an athlete. And so, you know, the overwhelming majority of his time is spent working out, baseball, basketball. And, you know, it's every single week. It's like this weekend we were in Washington and next weekend he's in Richmond. I mean, it goes on every single weekend. Thank goodness for that. But I just want to start with what you said, and then I'm going to get to a break in politics. Why this guy has access to an AK-47 is beyond me. And I know I'm going to get all my Second Amendment gun listeners all upset, and I'm going to get 15 texts. I don't care. Do you really think this guy should have had access to an automatic weapon? I mean, the guy was a kook on social media. I mean, like, I get the whole gun thing. I get we have to have automatic weapons if the government, you know, tries to put us in internment camps or whatever. All right, I get it, okay? I'm all there. But, I mean, take a breath, right? I mean,
well,
does a guy like
after,
this
– again, after Parkland, you and I talked about this, and we agreed that there had to be some – reshaping of the dialogue on this because everyone has taken a very hard position. People, I agree, an awful lot of people who I join as conservatives in almost every realm are hard and fast on the idea that there should be no limits on gun ownership. And I think some of the things that have been put forward in terms of if you have, you know, if you're mentally ill or, you know, if you have some history of violence, if things like if you have a constraining degree or whatever it's called, a restraining agreement against you because you've been violent towards a woman, things like that, you should not be able to have certainly a high caliber gun. I don't know what's the right way to approach it, but it does seem to me we have too many of these incidents, and almost always they are they take on much more gravity and they're much more worse than they would be because people have, you know, guns they can shoot. I mean, think about what happened in Las Vegas when the guy shot whatever it was, 50 people or whatever. I mean, honestly, we should not, this is unconscionable. We cannot let this continue. And again, I'm not smart enough to figure out what kind of constraint should be mandatory, but I just can't imagine that the country wouldn't welcome some reprieve from these mass shootings.
You know, why not ban them for 72 months and see if there's
and see
a
what
change?
Happens.
You know, no. I mean, but
now
but
you know,
it's not...
I do agree with those who say, okay, you know, what happens when you outlaw guns is that only outlaws will have guns. I do think there's some truth in that. It, you know, but at least we could start. We could start trying to limit their availability in ways that we haven't yet. It's a possible approach.
I mean, I think you could give it a shot or make the screening such that, you know, your social media is scanned. I mean, if anybody saw this guy's social media post, he should not have been able to buy an automatic weapon. The guy was
absolutely
crazy.
And so, I don't know if he bought it legally.
I don't know either, but maybe he didn't. But, I mean, there needs to be a dialogue, but we're not going to have it. We're certainly not going to have it 8 days before the midterms. John Frederick's a radio network. So bottom line, this, the Democrats need 23 seats. So I just had Scott Rasmussen on. He told me 12 of those mail them in. That means they need to pick up 11 seats and 30 are toss-ups. So they need 11 out of 30. If you're doing the math here, the Democrats now, overwhelmingly, it's theirs to lose. Can the Republicans hang on?
I don't know. 538 has Democrats winning the House, 6 out of 7. That is 85% odds. And they look at this stuff closer than I do, certainly. It does seem to me that I think the Democrats will take the House. I don't think they're going to take it by a huge majority, but it doesn't really matter. As I point out, I think it's going to lead to just an unbelievably rancorous 2 years, more partisan bickering, more investigations into the president, less ability to get things done. Now, you know, there are voters out there who are saying, hey, you know, Republicans have had the House forever. What's it done for us? They've had the Senate. But the answer is the House has actually passed a lot of bills that are incredibly important, and the Senate has simply sat on them because Democrats have insisted in the Senate on maximum debate, floor debate time on every single nominee from this government. Someday I'm going to write about what's gone on in the way of putting people in place in this administration. Democrats have been very effective and absolutely unpatriotic, in my view, in stalling and standing in the way of putting people in charge of organizations, for example, like Social Security, which is about a third of our federal budget. There's no one running. There's no appointed person running that organization because the guy has been left hanging in the wind, even though he's someone who's already been confirmed by the Senate on two former occasions. It is appalling, John. It is so bad faith that the Democrats have operated in. People can be mad about President Trump for one thing or another, but really they need to look at the absolutely, as I say, sort of bordering on unpatriotic behavior of Democrats running congressional organizations, because they have really blocked progress for this country. Obviously, there are issues like immigration, where this administration had a proposal on the table, which, by the way, almost every part of was wildly popular with the American people. Democrats don't want immigration reform because that gets rid of a wedge issue for them. I wish Latino voters would wake up and realize that Democrats have done nothing for them. They're not going to do anything for them. And, you know, why vote for them? I mean, it really, it's time for people to assess what have you done for me lately?
Well, you look at the numbers right now, and especially the Republicans were getting some momentum. The violence has really stalled that. I mean, that's just reality. People look at this and they're like, well, let's just put somebody else in charge, get a little balance. That's what's going on now. I've only got 20 seconds, Liz, but I have to read this text I got from Eric, who's a Second Amendment gun owner from Richmond. He says, there are already countless numbers of firearms out there. I own an AR, but I kind of like the idea of a temporary moratorium on the sale of some weapons and see what happens. Certainly couldn't hurt. You turned one person. John Frederick's Radio Network. Joining us now, Vanessa Newman. She predicted this. She said Brazil was going to go for change and elect a conservative, right-of-center new president. That has happened in the runoff. Vanessa Newman, great to have you with us.
Great to be on with you again, John. Thanks.
I know.
Always a pleasure. So, yeah. So, yesterday in Brazil, Tropical Trump won.
Tropical
That's literally
Trump.
What they call him. He's Tropical Trump. That's what the Brazilians wanted, and that's what they got. And like in an 11-point lead, which is – and he almost won in the first round. He came really close. So, this victory was – bigger. We had all predicted that he would win, but it was bigger than anybody predicted. The first round was. So this is the Brazilian people have spoken, and they want a right winger who will drain the swamp down there and provide safety and security, and they got it.
All right, now let me ask you this. I got a couple callers text me in earlier today and asked me if we were going to talk about this. And then one of them asked me, how do we pronounce his name? Because they say on TV it's being pronounced five different ways. How do you say his name?
Okay, well, good. His first name is Jair. It's very soft. A lot of Brazilian names are soft, like Jair Bolsonaro. Jair Bolsonaro. So it's a tough one. We're going to have to come up with a nickname. We could stick with Tropical Trump.
I like that better because it was interesting. This one gentleman texted me. He said, I've heard his name pronounced five different ways on TV. How do you say it? Jair Bolsonaro.
Yeah. I guess Jair Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro. Yeah.
I'll just call him President-elect Bolsonaro. How's that? That's
there you go. That's perfect.
Easiest one to do. Tropical Trump. Boy, you look at some of his platforms. You know, he said the other day, he said, you know, when I look back in history, the military coup in Brazil wasn't such a bad thing.
So this is what's going to be interesting about him, right? To separate what's going to be fact from what's going to be fiction. Like, in Latin America, you still have the culture of what we call the caudillo, which is like the strong man. It's almost like a warlord, right? So, like, when you had all the, you know, you have these vast tracts of land, a little bit like the American West, right? Like, you had the cowboys in the West. So in Latin American history, you have these big tracts of land, and these guys had their own little private armies, and they would fight the Spanish. And so the leaders of that are caudillos. They're kind of like warlords. But that culture of the strong man is still very prevalent, right? And that's how you know, Bolsonaro's one. Chavez is a left-wing one. You get him on both the right and the left. But it's that sort of cult of personality of, trust me, I'm going to defend you and keep you safe, right? So he's got that personality, and he's bucked the trend. So they love it when he talks tough, right? And he's talked really, really tough, which is why he's so controversial. He has said he's a sexist. I mean, he has said he considers women inferior, which doesn't make me happy. He's anti-gay, which also doesn't make me happy. But what has happened is that the Brazilians are so fed up with the main sort of two-party system, and more than the two-party system. I mean, they have like 15 parties, right? But like two dominate. And the one that has dominated for the last almost two decades is the left-wing party, the Workers' Party, that's supposed to be, you know, for the poor and poverty reduction. They kind of worked for a few years. They did reduce poverty for the first few years of the first term of what was called Lula. And then by the end, they just absolutely stole everything. So the corruption is just so massive. And the violence and the insecurity has just gone through the roof. So they said, I want change. And I want someone who's going to be tough and protect me. And that's what they voted for. There's a lot of hope. Now, Brazilians are, of course, there are some people who are racist, sexist, homophobic. It is Latin America after all. But by and large, a lot of people voted for him who said, I don't agree with any of that, but I want, he's not the left wing who kept stealing from our country for the last two decades. So there's a lot of betting going on that they can get him to do what they need him to do, bring the security, and that they can then modify his views on some of the social issues later on.
We're with Vanessa Newman. She's the president of a firm, Asymmetrica, and she's a Venezuelan native, also a citizen of the United States, and our number one voice in South America. She's spot on all the time, predicted this victory. Back on her show many, many months ago, before anybody heard of this guy, she said, watch the elections in Brazil. There's going to be a major shift there, a major change. And that was about 9-12 months ago, and she was spot on. Let me just ask you something, Vanessa Newman, straight out.
You make me sound like I should play the lottery.
Well, you're smart. I mean, and also, I got to tell my audience this. Everything she has predicted to me that would happen in South America since we met and started talking to each other has panned out. So that's why she's now a regular on my show. And you really need to pay attention because she's very dialed in and she understands all this stuff. So, Vanessa Newman, let me just ask you straight out. Are the Brazilian people better off today than they were a week ago?
I think so. Definitely. I think so. You know, he's going to, if he can, he has a very strong platform to end the corruption and some of the aspects of political patronage. Now, as you and I know, because you and I live in the swamp of Washington, D.C., that's easier said than done, right? In other words, you may have all the good intentions, all the good anti-corruption intentions on the planet, but then, you know, reality hits. and coalitions form against you, et cetera, and it gets dicey fast. Yes, I think that he will definitely crack down on some of the skirmishes and organized crime groups that are trafficking drugs from Bolivia through Brazil into the rest of the world. He's got the issues at the border of the refugees from my country who are fleeing a communist failing state to find a new opportunities. You have Venezuelans fleeing into Brazil. That has caused a lot of problems. The Brazilians won't officially acknowledge that they've got a lot of, you know, Middle Easterners being radicalized in the rural areas. They say that's not the case, but everybody knows it is. And Jair Bolsonaro is one of the few people who says we've got a problem and we need to address that. And Wall Street likes him. He's going to be pro-business. Even just by ending corruption or reducing corruption, that's going to be good for business, for foreign investment. He's going to need a lot of counseling in terms of his foreign relations, right? He needs to just get a good team around him because he doesn't really understand how to deal with the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. But Wall Street is very bullish on this guy. And by being a conservative and a right-winger, he's not going to take away foreign businesses. So if U.S. business goes down there and you've got a lot of oil, you've also got a lot of soybeans, and a lot of beef, right? Those are huge, and coffee, those are huge, huge, huge commodities that American companies invest in. He's not going to steal American investment. He's going to let the Americans come in, make money, and, you know, work in partnership with them. So I think this is all going to be great for Brazil. And as I said, after two decades of very left-wing governments throughout the region, basically pillaging the economy and stealing everything they could, the region has said enough. So this is going to be good for them. And on a slightly more personal note, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a native from Venezuela, and I'm very opposed to the, you know, socialist, corrupt, drug trafficking government that has taken over my country. And Bolsonaro is going to be good for us. He's going to pressure for change in Venezuela as well. He's not going to accommodate all those shenanigans right on his border.
Just explain Brazil's, Vanessa Newman, system of government. Can he get things done unilaterally? Does he need the parliament or the Congress? How does that work? So we know.
Oh, okay. So it's a very federative. In fact, it's called the Federative State of Brazil. It's like the official, you know, the official title, name of the country, right? So the problem is that he has... like the United States, right? You have a federal government, and then you have local governments. You have local governments that of the governorships that are that they have a lot of power. So they're in, like you have in the U.S., there's certain things that the president can't force the states to do. You have the same thing over there. But he has his party won a number of governorships, and also won a number of the won a significant number of governorships and a significant number of the Congress. So he has a very strong mandate because even other parties had joined. So as I explained in the first round of elections, I think we had 13 candidates, I believe.
Yes.
From 13 different parties, which is normal down there. Like every party gets to run a candidate. Then the top two go to the second round. But by the time you go to the second round, the parties have divided, right? So they have now realized that they need to think. A lot of them went and joined the Bolsonaro coalition. And now that Bolsonaro has such a strong mandate with the electoral vote, and he won many governorships, and he won many congressional seats, not enough for him to rule single.